Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants. Price may vary.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Okay, people, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., Santa's coming to town.
Santa! Oh, my God!
Santa here? I know him. I know him.
Wow! Talk to Jericho. Talk to Jericho. Part of thunder and roll. Talk to Jericho. Talk to Jericho. The Ayatollah of rock and roll.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll, and happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Christmas is Tuesday. Hope you got your shopping done and are all set for the holidays. Sounds like Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Duff McKagan is ready. The 2-year and 9-month Guns N' Roses World Tour has officially ended. They did a final show in Honolulu, Hawaii, as they say, the locals say, in the rain. But now Duff is enjoying a little vacation time there before heading home. And he's also working on a solo record. So we might have Duff McKagan back here on Talk is Jericho. But in the meantime and in between time, until we do, here is another fun-filled Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan. I just finished up, the last show of this 3.5-year run, and I'm in Hawaii. You know, on the trip over here, I was reading the American Medical Journal, and which I do, you know, often. And you call a sleepwalking nun. I didn't know this. A Roman Catholic. Thank you very much.
Yes. Very nice. Great stuff from Duff McKagan of Guns N' Roses. Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. I actually had a literal LOL on that one. I got it right away. Thanks to Omax Cognitive Boost for keeping me sharp and on my game and helping me understand Duff's ridiculous jokes. Despite all the travel and crazy schedule I've been keeping almost the entire year, thanks to Omax and thanks to Duff McKagan for delivering the laughs every single Friday. And you know who else is delivering some laughs today? One of my favorite guests on Talk is Jericho, talking about Sami Zayn. That's right. Sami Zayn returns to TIJ to give us an in-depth look at his current mental state since he's been recovering and rehabbing from double shoulder surgery. You haven't seen him on Raw or SmackDown recently. The reason why? He's been out. 2 rotator cuff surgeries. He's had a lot of time on his hands, as you're about to hear. He's been doing some interesting things like stand-up comedy and improv, watching Survivor Series, becoming a vegan, and musing about social media's effect on culture and humanity. He's one of the smartest guys and one of the most introspective guys. Sami Zayn and his partner, his friend, James McGee. You'll hear all about James McGee is going to be here. Sami's also talking about his plans to return to the WWE. They had a coming back soon video on Raw last week. When that may be and what that may involve, Sami's going to tell us. So here we go. It's the mental state of Sami Zayn examined right here on Talk is Jericho. The real behind the scenes stuff you want. Go to the back and there's 2 waters right in the kitchen there.
My friend James McGee is getting us water.
Sami Zayn texted me that you're with James McGee.
That's right.
It's like as if I should know this. Like, you know, I'm with, you know, Luke Richardson is inside. The Luke Richardson from the Montreal Canadiens.
I don't know him.
Oh. I thought you were a hockey fan.
I am, but I didn't know Luke Richardson.
Well, I didn't know James McGee.
James McGee either. Just actually filled me in that that's the current assistant coach.
So, Sami Zayn, which is great because
I have to hold this button because I'm holding it, eh?
No, there's no button to hold.
What is this?
That's just you that connects the mic to the cable.
I've been holding
make
it
sure
for...
you didn't screw it up. No, it's still working.
Okay, I've been holding it this entire time.
How many times have you done this podcast?
I don't know.
It's been the same setup every time.
I'm rusty, man. I've been injured. I forget how to hold a microphone now.
And that's the thing. So we're in Montreal, and I text Kevin and Sammy. And Kevin Owens, of course, he's not here. Sammy is.
Mm.
I'm glad you have the mic up to your mouth as you're taking a sip of water, which is very great.
Now that people know what it sounds like when I drink water.
That's not even, you got to make a noise, at least do a noise. Like, do this. Oh, yeah. Do this. Go.
The crinkling of the bottle.
So it's very exciting. And you just mentioned we don't know what we're going to talk about. Nor do we know, because we never know, but you're always a very interesting guest to have on
all
the show.
I suppose.
first of all, you are injured.
Yeah.
What's going on, man?
Oh, man. A whole lot, I would say, and nothing all at the same time. And I know wrestling fans maybe don't want to hear this, but I've been loving being off. You know, I think maybe wrestling fans want to hear, like, I can't wait to get back and I miss everything, and I don't miss anything. I'm just like, not trying to sound like
no, but let me.
I don't miss it yet.
On the road,
yeah.
To be off is a luxury,
dude. I'm like a little, not concerned, but I'm surprised by how little I've missed it. That's
and
weird.
How long
huh?
has it been?
4 months. What? June 19th.
July, August, September, October, November. Yeah, so 5 months.
5 months, and I don't miss it.
Now,
what's up with that?
I don't know. You tell me.
I don't know.
But what did you have done?
I had both shoulders done
at the same time.
7 weeks apart, because you can't do them. You need one arm at least to be functional. You need to be able to, you know, use the bathroom
and
eat.
Right.
So I did the right one first because I thought that'd be the trickier of the two, and it was. So you know, left hand for
which
basic.
Is hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, like then, even stuff like, you know, like driving a car if you have a stick shift.
I don't, but yes, imagine
or something that, you know, we might not want to say, but it's the cleaning
going to
your,
the bathroom,
cleaning your bottom,
of course, and. Without divulging too much, I was surprised by my dexterity. I was really,
but I was the same. I broke my right arm, and to go if you're a righty and to go to lefty, you're getting some. There's some stains going on.
No, man, I did really,
really,
really well.
Okay,
I was a little impressed by my abilities. I was
so then you had both shoulders done for rotator cuffs.
Yes,
that's a serious.
It's pretty serious. I mean, I'm getting there. I guess, you know what, I'm overstating my lack of desire to return. I do miss performing. Mm-hmm. But like you said, I've been doing this super long time. We're on the road a lot, you know how it is. And so I don't know. I just know that when I'll be back, I'll really enjoy it. But I'm not sitting there itching and clawing. And I know that, I don't know if, you know, my employer will want to hear that, as if, like, does this guy not care?
But the thing is, you're not cleared yet, though. You're
still
healing.
No, I'm not even close. I'm not even close. I need a few more months.
So I think that's the way you should be thinking, rather than, like, I got to get back, because you can't come
right. back. And you know what? My first surgery, night and day, by the way, my first surgery and this surgery, because the first surgery happened at a very inopportune time, in a time of great uncertainty. I wrestled Cena here in Montreal.
And that was the first time you're basically
first
debut,
time, like, is
right?
it? You're right, but I didn't even know. Is it the debut? Is it not the debut?
Right.
I don't even know, but I know this is huge, huge opportunity. Everything's huge. And I'm healthy. And then bam, all of a sudden I'm told this shocking news, like, you need surgery, which I didn't expect.
And you heard that right in the match.
I heard it in the match. And, but still, you know, like, growing up, I don't know if it was like this for you, or maybe just being around wrestling and even just around people in life, but you always had a friend or somebody who was like, oh yeah, my shoulder pops out all the time.
Yeah.
And then they just pop it back in. I thought, like, oh, my shoulder popped out. I pop back in. I carry on.
Ta-da.
Yeah. But no, actually, if you have a torn, if a shoulder is popping out and popping in, your labrum is probably severely damaged.
So you had torn your rotator cuff area that first time?
No, I tore my labrum and the cuff, but I also had a cuff tear from like 2009 that I think, you know, over time might have got worse, or in that moment got worse. But it was the labrum that was the reason for it dislocating.
Yeah.
Okay. But so, all this to say, it's a very different experience. It's like, it's just like being blindsided with something versus being able to mentally prepare for something. So the second time around, I knew I was hurt for a long time and I was working through it. And then the other one got bad again, or the good one got bad, and I was working with two bad ones. I knew I would need it eventually, and then it just came time to do it.
How do you know?
I just knew, I mean, I couldn't lift very hard much in the gym.
Arm up.
Yeah, I was just very, like, I was hyper aware of both my shoulders.
Our bodies.
Yes, yes. They were not good. And I was carrying on like this for probably the left one, maybe a year, year and a half. I don't even know. Because, you know, after surgery, it's like, you never had surgery. Mm. Man, you're the Iron Man of pro wrestling, honest to God.
The only time I ever broke my arm, or surgery, like I said, when I broke my arm in 94.
He still worked.
I was off 7 weeks.
Yeah.
But and that was the only injury I've ever had from wrestling.
Yeah, really remarkable, especially considering the style.
Yeah.
And the guys you've worked over the years.
That's true.
And,
that's true.
You know, it's really remarkable. You're very lucky.
Well, I mean, one of the few, like I said. But what for you, when you know that you're hurting, when do you finally bite the bullet and say, I got to take myself out of the game?
It was really when the second one started getting bad. I was a little concerned because not I was concerned for other people's safety because, you know, if I can't, you know,
catch somebody. If
I'm starting to get a little worried about it. And it was really when the MRI came in and confirmed my worst fears, which is that something was torn, because I thought, oh, it's just bothering me. And, you know, we're on the road so much. You're just trying to maintain. But then at a certain point, you're like, yo, this isn't going away, you know. So at a certain point, you have to confront it. Anywho, not to drone on and on about it, but my mental state going into it, which might be the theme of this entire podcast, mind you.
The mental state of Sami Zayn. That's our title.
Yes, there it is. I knew we would stumble across some sort of hook.
That's it. That's our title.
Because I swear to God, like this whole time off, maybe that's why I haven't really been drooling to get back. One, because I knew I had a long road ahead of me, but also in this time off, it's more time than I've ever had to just stop and think. Just think about everything. And you know me already, I'm a somewhat pensive person.
To this day, whenever I see a graveyard, I think of you.
Right. You know, like, I don't know. I just think about things. Yeah. And now I'm just, I have more time to think about broader things, but also more time for introspection. Mm. You know, and you get to an age, and I don't know how that, you know, we've never really gone that deep as far as, like, you know, looking deep inside yourself.
Philosophical.
Yeah, we've never really conversed much on that level, but I've just had a lot of time to think about, like, why am I like this? Or why do I do this? Or why do I do that? Or what am I really upset about, you know, with this? And why? And just peeling back the layers of other people and of the world and of society and this culture and, you know, but then also at a certain point, you got to like confront yourself, because you're looking at like, oh, why is America so messed up? And why is this gun violence or whatever? And all these horrible things. But then you start, eventually you're looking at everybody else is doing wrong. And eventually you got to go like, so where do I fit into all this?
Right.
Right. And so you just start thinking about yourself and how do you treat people? And, you know, sometimes you're that guy.
Mm.
And I don't know. I've been. The mental state of Sami Zayn has really been the theme of my time off, and I've just
because
had a lot of time.
I think that's
one,
like, the only time you ever really get off in wrestling,
yeah,
is if you get hurt.
Dude, and you realize that when you're not hurt, when you're on that hamster wheel and it's just tunnel vision, like, gotta keep going.
And also being in the world, and it's one thing I've realized in working elsewhere from WWE, is that, like, you get caught in the mindset there of gotta get, and we're going out of our way to make sure to impress, and worried if, do I have heat, and what did I do wrong, and that's not the case.
And then you get perspective the moment you're out of it.
Right.
And it
does make you realize, like, you can exist outside of that world and sometimes feel even better about it.
Well, and that's another big thing is, and this could turn into a long conversation, but realizing also that, like, your identity ends up latching on to this thing.
Yes.
And then you're not that thing. Mm-hmm. So I've mentioned this to a lot of guys, even guys, I don't know, in NXT or whatever, we've had conversations about this, because now I'm at the PC doing my rehab.
Okay.
So I don't know, you know, I need somebody to listen to my who's within earshot, you know, and I just start rambling.
I'm sure they're happy to have you there to talk to them, though.
Nah, I don't try to, like, pass on knowledge. And you know what's great is I feel like maybe a bit more of a complete person. And my ego is, like, I'm really working on my ego and keeping my ego in check. And, like, you know, once upon a time, and I'm sure you could probably relate to this, is, like, you're a prominent person in pro wrestling. Mm. You're Chris Jericho, you know?
Right.
So if you walk in a room to a bunch of young wrestlers, like, somewhere deep down, you expect a certain response of, like, oh, hello, sir. And that's Chris Jericho, right? And to a certain extent, I understand that, and because that's a part of the wrestling culture in that respect. But, like, I genuinely don't care about that. And also, I don't get it. And I'm okay with that. So like I walk in the PC and no one's kissing my ass.
Okay.
And I don't care. It's great. Like once upon a time, and I'm just being honest, there was a time when, especially when I first came to WWE, because I was so concerned about like the wrestling culture, and this is a different culture, and we need to instill that wrestling culture. And like if people didn't shake hands or show respect, it like really got to me on a, it was a me problem, you know, and I was pushing my own weird baggage and ego and whatever it is on other people and under the guise of like the wrestling culture, but really it was an ego thing, you know, if I'm being honest, sure, which I now have time to identify these things. But like now I don't care. Mm-hmm. Someone doesn't say hi to me or like, doesn't that person did 16 years in the biz, you know, like
brother
of 17 years and I'm Sammy, so I'm a Monday Night Raw every Monday. Like, I don't care. I just don't care. And it doesn't bother me. And I don't want it and I don't get it. And I don't, and none of it bothers me. So that's some progress.
So yeah. But when you go to the PC to do your rehab and what do you,
I just, you know, I talk about whatever I'm talking about now and like the world and ourselves and,
People look at you like you're crazy? Or they
so, you know, Brian Duncan, one of our athletic trainers, kind of a hilarious character. And everyone who's come through NXT knows him and loves him. And he's a great guy and a great athletic trainer. But, you know, a bit more on the, like, quieter side. And I'm very much the opposite. So sometimes I'm very mindful of my rambling. And I'm like, God, I must be driving him crazy right now. Once in a blue moon, he'll like, Sammy, you're here to rehab, right? Oh, yeah, sorry. Let me do my internal rotation here. You know, but whatever. But, yeah, I just had a lot of time to philosophize and think. And so I actually thought of, maybe this was someone else's idea, of doing a podcast, not a podcast, but a, like a YouTube thing or just like a vlog, video log, like called Spare Time with Sami Zayn, you know, and just... And so I thought, okay, I'm getting my surgery. Perfect time to start. So I'm in the hospital bed, and the nurse closes the door, and she leaves. And I pull out my phone, and I put it on selfie mode. I hold the phone up, and I go, I click record, and I go, hey, guys, Sami Zayn here. And, oh, God, this is awful. And I just stopped right away. It's like, no, this isn't me. I can't do this. I just
that
couldn't.
Quick?
It lasted maybe 6 seconds. Hey guys, Sami Zayn here, and I'm in this hospital bed. I hate this. Boom, click. That was it. So that was the end of Spare Time with Sami Zayn.
That should be like it, though. You just neurotically getting mad at yourself while you're from this. Sucks.
It's just
terrible.
It's just not. What I meant is like I didn't like it. I don't like, man. That's a whole
like
other thing.
What, talking and being like a pundit, or
no, I don't.
Being
I don't
a soapbox, or
I don't think I like letting people in. The fans to that level, like, hey guys, just in my house here, about to cook an omelet. Here it is.
Yeah, because that's the culture we live in now. Right? A lot of people do that.
And I think it's kind of narcissistic a little bit, and I don't know, vain and all this stuff. And it's just stuff I hated it. I don't know what it was. It was 6 seconds in. I was like, this is wrong, off. You know, so just, I don't know.
That's very interesting because Kevin is the same. Kevin is not on social media. He might be on Twitter again.
Kevin's interesting because when he was on the Independents, because I got signed a little bit before him. And then in that time that I got signed, I was doing my thing in NXT and he was still kind of on the indies. He told me he took a very big step in that year when I was gone. And he attributed a lot of it to doing his, he had a YouTube show called Kevin Steen's Weekend Escapades. And he said that was like the difference between him being, you know, a popular independent act to being really over. People really start to identify when he let them in and let them know what his family was up to and his son and his wife and his life. And, you know, because now people feel like they really know you. And I know the Young Bucks as well. That was a huge
being the elite. Yeah,
that was the difference. Now they go from being guys who throw super kicks to like, you know, we know you. We know your family. We know your life. We love you. Yes. Yeah. And certainly there's something to be said about that. And God, I don't know if we discussed this in the past, but there's sort of this two ways of looking at it. And one is kind of a little more on the rock and roll side, which you might appreciate, is like the reclusiveness of like an Axl Rose or somebody like that, where because they don't let you in, you almost wonder more about them.
I still feel strange whenever Axl tweets.
Yeah, right. Like, you know, Axl Rose shouldn't tweet.
He shouldn't be tweeting.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the Undertaker sent me a smiley face emoji once. I'm like, Undertaker should not be doing
I totally understand because what you're saying.
Like, you know, there's like AC/DC, for example, nothing. You'll never see anything on them.
That's interesting.
Social media, Van Halen's the same as well. You can't find out anything about those guys.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because in the world we live in now, it's almost a prerequisite. But
yeah, and WWE's big on that. And I get And I get why. Because there is, I get it. And it works. I just don't know if it works for me.
Right.
You know, I could let people in to, and this might even go back. Because I told you I'm almost borderline, like not compulsive, but really interested in the why. And maybe it even goes back to my career on the independents, where because of the hood, I was very private even back then, protecting my identity all the time.
Right.
And so now that kind of followed me even to WWE. It's like, hang on, you only get this. You can speculate about the rest.
Yeah.
But this is like, this is what you get. And I don't know. So the...
But that is, like you said, that is the WWE culture of it.
It's far bigger than WWE. It's the...
That's the world with
it. It's the culture, yes.
But I like Ambrose's was great, where he said, they maybe get a Twitter, so here it is. Enjoy.
And zero tweets. And that's fine. And in a way, that works. I mean, he's been champion. He's done very well for himself. It's not like...
His gimmick's also very mysterious, kind of.
Right.
But the tenants...
So I'm just caught in this weird no man's land where I'm still on Twitter, but I find it's a tool. We were just talking...
James McGee and I were
just talking about this moments ago at Bustan, the Arab restaurant right next door to here.
What is it called?
Bustan.
Shout out to Bustan.
Yeah. Oh, they know I love them. what were we talking about?
We were just talking about the social media. James looks a little confused. James? That's what you're talking about?
No, but what was I just talking about?
You know, social media, you and James.
It's a tool. Yeah. It's a tool, okay? So my father gave me a great piece of advice one time, and it really stuck with me. And I guess I'll give you the somewhat hilarious pretext to it is I think he had a suspicion that I was watching internet pornography. And this is when, you know, the internet is somewhat new to have high-speed internet in every household. So like 2001 or whatever.
So you still have to plug into a phone line to get on.
No, I think at this point it's high-speed, but it's mind-blowing that high-speed exists.
Yeah.
But so I think maybe he went through history. And this is all speculation because the way he broached to the subject, you know, he was trying to give me a lecture about the dangers of the internet without actually coming right out and calling me out on whatever he might have thought was going on.
AKA was what was going on.
Possibly. I neither confirm nor deny. But he said this thing, and it's really brilliant, and I remember it still. He said, you know, the internet, you need to be careful with the internet. He said, the internet is like anything else. It's a tool, like a knife. You could use a knife to cut bread and feed people, or you could use a knife to stab somebody. So it's all in how you use it. Mm-hmm. And that's really, really pertinent and great advice for kind of everything, but especially social media and especially the internet. I mean, my career, like because of you came from a different time, the territories and whatever, and I came from a time of technology and the internet, and before social media was the message boards, and the buzz that I kind of got to even start getting booked in the States was internet buzz. Like, oh, who are these guys in Canada? And so, you know, and like the promotions I worked for were all internet buzz promotions. Mm-hmm. Ring of Honor, PWG, IWA Mid-South. Those are the internet. There was a buzz, right? And so the internet is responsible in many ways for my career. But, you know, social media especially, I'm not knocking. It's all in how you use it. You can use social media to, social media was responsible for, like, the Arab Spring, and they overthrew a government. Didn't last very long in Egypt, but, you know, it can be used for extremely, extremely powerful things, or it could be used to just cut somebody down or just, you know, obsessively watch pornography or whatever. Like, it could be used for really, really destructive things. Or it could be used, as a marketing tool, or it could be used as a, like the whole thing I did with the fundraiser for Syria. Sure. That was exclusively through social media. And we were able to do amazing things for other people because of social media. So I don't think social media itself, it's just a thing. And again, if you want to get broader, like mental state of Sami Zayn, everything's just a thing. And it's all how you take it.
It's how you use it, how you take it. It's just like anything else. If you take a sleeping pill, or if you take steroids, or if you smoke weed, or if you drink coffee, in moderation, that's what it's there for.
Right.
If you abuse it, that's when you'll have problems.
Right. Your relationship with that thing is maybe what's more important than just the thing. Is still just the thing. My favorite quote from, I remember when I was in high school, I was going to put this in my yearbook as, you know, favorite quote, and I didn't end up using it. And I really regret I regret very few things in my life, but if I could go back and change one thing, it'd be my entire high school yearbook by what do you call it?
A little write-up.
Garbage. Yeah. Garbage. I'm embarrassed by it all these years later. But the
what's your high school yearbook write-up?
It's just crap, you know. Shout out to my friends, EGFAMC, you know, like just stupid idiot, little kid.
So what'd you write, though?
I ended up using the quote, you get more bees with honey than you do with vinegar.
Yeah.
But if I could go back in time, I would use the one that was the front runner at the time, which is William Shakespeare, nothing is good or bad, but thinking makes it so, which is also a lot more profound and would have made me sound cooler too, but also far more pertinent in my entire life. Not that the other one isn't too. I do believe, you know, you get more out of being good to people than being bad to people. But ultimately, I believe like nothing is really good. Nothing's really bad. It's just... First of all, a lot of it's just made up. We say, we also say what's good and what's bad. Mm. You know what I mean? It's all just, everything's just made up. Mm-hmm. Even these identities, everything, this whole society, it's all just a bunch of made up.
A matrix.
It's all just made up stuff.
We're on the grid.
We're all just made up, man.
All right, you guys know that I travel every week for AEW and I'm on the road for Fozzy as well. But I don't worry about appliances or any of the stuff at my house breaking down while I'm gone. Because we've got American Home Shield. And truthfully, I'm not a fix-it-myself guy anyway. So even if I was home and we had a leaky faucet or a faulty water heater, I'm not the one who's going to fix it. And unexpected breakdowns like that won't break your bank with American Home Shield warranty. Because covered repairs and replacements are taken care of just like that. You just choose a plan that works for you and your budget. And then when a covered item in your home breaks, contact American Home Shield. And their trusted and qualified pros will fix or replace it based on the coverage in your agreement. Right now, you can get 20% off. Just go to ahs.com/Jericho and save that 20%. That's ahs.com/Jericho for 20% off any plan. American Home Shield, don't worry, be warranty. See ahs.com/contracts. For coverage details, including limit amounts, fees, limitations, and exclusions, New Jersey residents, the product being offered is a service contract and is separate and distinct from any product or service warranty which may be provided by the home or building manufacturer.
See, this is really deep stuff, though.
This is what, it's been 6 months of this. Just at home in my lazy boy. Just
but when you're talking about, like you said, like there's other people that are injured, like I don't know, just throwing a name out, like Joey Janela injured his knee and he's been in social media. We know his rehab. We know exactly what he's doing. I haven't heard anything about you or Kevin because you both went down at the same time and neither one of you are really using that social media tool to let people know, here's my rehab, here's what's going on.
No, but I am still using social media, but I'm trying to use it in a way that I feel is somewhat productive. And I've kind of like, I don't know, man, it's this delicate balance. So I noticed Becky Lynch, who's like really good friend of mine, but yeah. She's really blown up recently too, yeah. Right? And she's using Twitter in a very witty way. She's a very witty person, yeah. And she's using it in a really cool way. And she's getting herself like really over, but it's like, I don't know if I would do it anymore, even as a heel. Like, I just don't want to use it to cut people down and stuff. Cause I have in the past used it to like, let's say I'd get, I don't know what, like a xenophobic tweet or like, go back to your country, terrorist, whatever, some asshole. And I'd be like, okay. And I would like copy, I would take a screenshot and I would tag them and I would like rip them to shreds and it would get like 10,000 likes or whatever. And you know, there should be more studies on this, but it's all very new. But you know, the first time it happened, because Kevin used to do this all the time.
All the time.
Right? And so when I did it the first time, I felt literally high, or like almost as if I just drank a pot of coffee. I was like, dude, look at this. Everyone's ripping him to shreds. Look how many likes. Everyone loves it. Look, everyone's attacking him now, calling him an asshole. He deleted his Twitter. It felt like such a conquest. I got high off it. A little sick to say out loud now, but yeah,
but
you know?
Then you realize,
but then I realized, and people eat that stuff up with a spoon, but I'm like, you know what, I'm contributing to a toxic culture, to a toxic swirl of shit, and I don't want to contribute to that anymore.
The way I looked at what I used to do too, and I really don't anymore, because okay, I'm looking at this guy or girl or whatever, this person that has, let's say, 147 followers, saying something like, you know, go back to your account, whatever, and you then bury the person, and then suddenly hundreds of people are burying this person. if you didn't put this guy on watch, no one would ever see it, no one would ever know. But now you have a guy or girl that's getting buried by hundreds of people. We are used to it as performers.
Right. That's a good point.
This poor person, like, it could, you know, I mean, you talk about social media bullying. If the person takes it the wrong way, they could, like you said, delete their account or just worse, feel bad, yeah. Or worse.
Yeah, you never know.
And that's why I'm like, wow, we do have the power to, like, say, sick 'em, boys.
Oh, yeah.
And there's hundreds of people that are going to jump on somebody right. and tear them to shreds. Meanwhile, they probably don't deserve it because they're just,
dude, no one
just
deserves
talking
anything.
Shit.
Right. And, like, you know, something's got to be broken in this person already to log on to Twitter and just mercilessly attack someone they don't know.
But I said, we read it and maybe he's got 150 followers.
Right.
And then by reposting it, now suddenly whatever you have, let's say you have a million or 2 million.
Yeah, yeah.
2 million people are reading this poor person's tweet. And I say poor person.
No, but it is poor person because
somebody who said something they shouldn't have and now they're getting crucified.
Right. But so this is just me also working on being a more empathetic person in general is like, look, man, that person's damaged goods already just like everybody else. Yeah. Because there's got to be the same way that we got to have a screw loose in our head to become wrestlers and performers and whatever that's all about, whatever deep seated reason we're doing that for, which I still haven't completely unearthed, you know, it takes a certain missing screw for someone to log in and to a total stranger, even though you're Chris Jericho and you're a public persona, there's this cultural, mindset of, oh, they're a public persona, anything goes.
Right.
But ultimately, you're a stranger to them. But they feel like they, you know, they can just go on and say, Chris, you're a terrible person. I hope you break your neck in the ring or something awful like
die.
That. I hope you die. I hope your
and that's
kids,
what, listen, like,
they
fans.
Will say the most ruthless stuff, right?
I would never like text, who do I not know? I don't know, let's say Mick Jagger. Let's say the Stones put out a song I didn't like. I would never text, hey, at Mick Jagger, your new Stone song sucks. You guys should just retire and die already.
Yeah.
Like, I would never do that.
That Pop McGee Hughes here,
by James
the way.
James McGee is laughing. He had to pull his glasses off on that one. But it's like, I don't like the song, but I'm not going to go online.
That's what I'm saying. It takes a special missing screw for you to be that person.
Right.
So, like, I don't know what their deal is, man, and that's fine. You got you're dealing with whatever it is you're dealing with, and that's cool, man. And that's fine. I don't want to be a part of it anymore, man. I'm at the point in my life where I'm withdrawing a little bit from systems and things like that that I don't agree with. And I noticed that I was just as much a part of the problem as anyone else. If I go and I rip someone on social media, I'm like, I'm just part of the problem. Mm-hmm. And everyone does these stuff, but no one, you know, a lot of people don't have time to stop and reflect like, oh man, I'm a part of the problem. Mm-hmm. And another thing, and this is another huge thing in my life, is I stopped eating meat, and I think you already know that, right?
I'm not sure if I do.
Last
time I saw you was in December.
Tampa. It's been a while.
Okay.
It's been like almost 2 years now.
Okay.
And ultimately, and I don't preach about it much or nothing, but I just had to eventually confront myself with the reality that I was being a total hypocrite. And I'm not saying everyone that eats meat is a hypocrite. I ate meat my entire life, but I'm saying I confronted my own hypocrisy by saying, well, look, obviously, I don't agree with the industrialization, how these animals are treated, blah, blah, blah. And I feel sorry for them. But then I go home and I stuff, you know.
Have a steak.
Yeah. And I'm like, whoa, okay. I'm a part of the problem. And then I just reach a point where I'm like, I'm not playing ball anymore. I don't agree with these industries. I don't agree with how they do business. You're not getting my money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. It's just...
How does that make you feel?
I feel way better. I feel way better because I think a lot of unhappiness... I'll put on my Sami Zayn amateur Canadian PhD psychoanalysis hat here, but I just think a lot of people, there's some unhappiness there because, you know, people aren't living in line with their values. Because it's a very hard thing to do because we have our values and our beliefs over here, but then we have the way we're living over here, and they're not on the same frequency. And when you're not on that same frequency, it causes a disruptance in your whatever you want to call it. There's a disruptance, and it's just you feel off.
Yeah, inside of you.
Yeah,
in your mental state or your consciousness, conscious, whatever.
And I just feel like, look, I'm at the point in my life where I'm trying to center myself as much as possible. Like, if I say something, my actions are somewhat in line, because you'll never be perfect. And that's something I've learned I have to forgive myself about too, because I can't possibly withdraw from the system entirely because then you'd have to be a hermit and not be a part of anything and not pay tax to Uncle Sam and not, you know, you just, unless you're willing to withdraw from society completely, you're going to be a part of some dirty money somewhere along the lines.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Even if it's not, if you're not taking money from someone dirty, you're giving your money to some dirty things. You know what I'm saying? Whether you realize it or whether you don't. So I'm just trying to center myself as much as possible. And, you know, not eating meat was a big thing for me because I never, ever thought I would. I never thought it was possible. Mm-hmm. I never thought I could do that. I just, and I never related to vegetarians or vegans or nothing. They just seemed so strange to me, you know, and now all of a sudden.
It's the old joke. How do you know that someone's a vegan?
Oh, they'll tell you about it. Is that the punchline? Yeah. Right, right. And I try very hard to not be preachy or pushy or whatever, but like, look, man, at a certain point, if you don't agree with how animals are treated, but you're eating like three steaks a day or double protein on every meal, because wrestler brother got to get protein. And that was me, double protein on every meal. You're talking about six portions of animal protein every day. Oh, but those poor animals in those cages. Chomp, chomp, chomp.
So how do you replace that protein?
I just, I don't know. Yeah, protein just do shakes. Tempeh, tofu.
Gotcha.
Plant-based shakes or whatever. And I've never even really talked about it. This is the first time I'm talking about it. But really, it's like, it's just a piece of the bigger pie of where I'm at in life.
Because, like, you know, Austin Aries has done this show multiple times, and he is a staunch vegan supporter like... almost feel like he's gonna go to Capitol Hill and like, if you eat meat you are the devil. Like, you do really have this whole, it's not a cult. Like, for example, Rich Ward, the guitar player Fozzy, he's a vegan, but it's not a militant version where I feel there's some people that are very militant about it.
And, you know, maybe that's whatever
your attitude is.
That's their deal, man. I don't know what they're dealing with, but everyone's dealing with something. And I'm trying to be, you know, I'm trying to be way more forgiving and way more empathetic, because, man, I just realized it's all just a toxic cycle, and we're angry at other people, but they're more or less doing the same thing we're doing, just the inverse.
So let me ask you, this question, and this is something interesting to me. When you're talking about being cleared in, what is it, 4 months?
Yeah.
4 months, whatever.
Yeah.
Part of doing what we do is having that, not anger,
dude.
Is there's an anger inside and a fire, and I'm not hitting the right word.
Ego.
An ego.
That's something I'm concerned about.
To do this job.
Yes, absolutely.
Especially to survive in the WWE system, you have to stand up for yourself and be a little bit, like Steve said, Steve Austin, you got to be a little bit of an asshole,
dude,
to make it to the top.
You're so right. And I got to tell you, it's very funny you asked me that, because that has actually been one of the big, and this isn't me burying the company, but it is the
question. Yeah.
It's the culture of the company. It's the culture of showbiz and succeeding, and just the concept of ambition,
right,
and ego. And it's all dressed up. We use very nice words to dress up some pretty ugly things, you know, like being ambitious. Oh, that's a good quality. But, like, you know, you could use that as an excuse to be a real egotistical piece of garbage, to do whatever you got to do, and then like justify by saying, oh, but that's just business, you know, I'm just business. But so, yeah, it's very funny because you're touching on something that I've been thinking about a lot. One of my big things that I've been working on in this time off of reflection and you know, whatever you want to call it, introspection, has been letting go of ego, or not letting egotism sort of drive me. But I'm like, oh man, how's this going to serve me in this company, in this climate? I have to, like, it's, you need it. You're right. You're totally right. And I don't know. I truly don't know. We'll see. We'll see. And I haven't overthought it, to be honest with you, because I also have this other thing that I'm worried about, which is once you go back, you just fall into the same trap, sort of. Somebody's slipping you a note under your door there.
Go ahead. It says, I have cranberry. Would you like it now?
Urgent note. Such urgency that a note needed to be slipped under the... Look, I'm sorry I don't want to bother you. I know you guys are doing something.
I have cranberry.
Amazing. God, I don't remember what I was talking about. Yeah, so I'm worried about two things. I'm worried about how is letting go of ego going to serve me and getting ahead in my career in the WWE bubble, anywho. Because I do think, like, in a weird way, it wasn't a factor in my indie career as much. That was really just about do your thing and you get where you get. Talent takes you where you know it goes. WWE is a bit of a different animal. I haven't overthought it. And the other thing, though, is that, you know, and this isn't just about deeper things, but also about just wrestling things. When you're on the sidelines and you watch the show, which I've consciously tried not to watch too much of, but when you watch a show, you start catching all these patterns and traps that everyone falls into.
Like what?
Just work the way they work. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, everybody does this, and this is the formula, and everybody, like, oh, run the corner, watch the elbow, boom, duck one, duck two, boom, oh, big move, yeah, one, two, kick out. Sell, you know, it just becomes a bit formulaic, and you watch it from the outside and you're like, man, everybody does this. When I come back, I'm gonna do things all differently, you know. But then you end up going back and your intentions are good at first, but then, you know, oh brother, we got 8 minutes and we just lost a seg, and just do it.
But everything is so overanalyzed there too, though. Like, you have to go over, if you have 8 minutes, you got to go over it with your agent to write it down for the cameraman to know exactly what this is going to be. And that's why it falls into the trap, because if someone doesn't like the fact you want to do something different, you have to ask permission for it.
Yeah, and you got to run it up the chain of command, and it's very difficult. And man, people don't know. It's and you don't know unless you're there.
Right.
You truly don't know unless you're there. And on the, you know, just not to do with nothing, but I just want to take this time to actually give the writers a little bit of a break, because, you know, they get crapped on the most. But people don't understand how it works there, and it's not the writers, and it's not the agents, it's not the talent, it's just something about the system that it works a very specific way. Mm-hmm. And unless you're in it, you don't know. So it's very easy to sit at home and watch and go, why are they pushing this person? What are they doing? It's harder than you think. Cut everybody some slack. It's tricky. Neither here nor there. I'm just saying that because it's very hard to explain to people who aren't in it.
Thing though is, it's all Vince's decisions,
right? But even if Vince, let's say you had an idea and you want to change it, getting it to Vince, you know, like, oh man, well, the show's already, we're about to go live, and that might affect what they're doing in Seg 6. Like, it's a puzzle piece, you know. And I'm not putting the heat all on Vince and saying, oh, it's just one guy. No, he factors in a lot of stuff you don't factor in. You know, I've gone to him before with what I thought was a really good idea, and he's like, oh, but it doesn't work, and here's why. And I go, oh, okay.
Yeah, because it's
clashing
with something that's happening
exactly.
Two segments later or earlier.
Yes, or a million things, you know. All this to say, you don't know unless you're in it, but then you can take that lesson, which is, again, what Mental State of Sami Zayn's all about these last few months, is taking that lesson and applying it on much broader terms, which is, unless you're there, you don't really know. And I should know that about people, because I work in a field where people don't know what's going on, but they still rip it apart, even though I know the truth, right? I know how it really works. I know what happened. I know why my segment came out this way. I know why my match came out this way. These millions of people who watch it don't know, and they have an opinion about it. And I got to just be okay with that, because they don't know. So now I need to take that lesson that I already know and start applying it to life. Which is like, this guy that comes at me and attacks me, it'd be so easy to just say, hey man, you're an asshole. But like, yo, I don't know. I don't know what happened. I don't know what led you to be the person you are.
What's the circumstances?
Circumstances, everything, man.
Here's why you should be getting Factor Meals. They're always delivered fresh, never frozen. They're chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and delicious. They're ready to eat in just 2 minutes. And if you go to factormeals.com/TIJ50, and use my promo code TIJ50, you'll get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box. Plus, how good does this sound? Parmesan and sun-dried tomato chicken penne with roasted green beans. That's what I had last week before heading out to AEW. Factor makes eating delicious, quick, and easy, which is exactly what I need, especially on travel days. I ate it right out of the Factor packaging as well, so no cleanup afterwards. So you can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need, and you can pause and reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. And Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. So head to factormeals.com/TIJ50 and use code TIJ50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month. That's code TIJ50 at factormeals.com/TIJ50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
So you watched any wrestling since you've been gone?
A little bit. And I will admit, I watched Survivor Series, and that gave me the bug a little bit to perform. Mm-hmm. And actually, just, you know, since James McGee is right here, I will say that I did improv with James as an improver here in Montreal. Nice. Very funny guy. And I did improv with him. He teaches here at the Montreal Improv School. And we're longtime friends. I actually trained him to wrestle many years ago. Wrestled as Twiggy. Did pretty well for himself in the Quebec and Ontario scene.
Twiggy. All right. That's Twiggy. A lot of James McGee here.
Dude, you got it. You got to see.
I think we should call this podcast with James McGee.
Mental State of Sami Zayn featuring James McGee.
It's like me and James McGee.
Yeah.
Janis Joplin.
Freedom's just another word.
Man, Jimmy McGee.
Yeah. Good enough for me and James McGee. How many times have people sang that song to you? Yeah, a lot.
But how many times has Sami Zayn sang it to you on Talk is Jericho? One time, brother. Yeah. So you did some improv with James
McGee. Improv,
McGee.
And man, that was rad.
It's
that was awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah. I loved it. And that, like, that really gave, you know, bit me with the performance bug, but in a different way, which is, let me kiss your ass for a minute.
Please do.
Because I got to tell you, Chris, and I was going to tell you this privately, but I may as well just tell you on the show. I admire you in many ways because you've done a lot of things that I would like to do, and I admire your sort of Renaissance man approach to entertainment. Like, you know, you've done a lot in wrestling, but you also love rock and roll, and I love rock and roll, and we've talked about rock and roll. We've talked about the Beatles, and we've done all kinds of stuff, but it's really cool to me. I want to be in a band, but I kind of suck, unfortunately, but like, I'd love to be in a band, but you went out and you did it. You do all these side things. I'd love to write a book. You've written 4 books. You know, I'd love to do a TV show. I'd love to do all these projects. So I find it very inspiring because it's, and coincidentally, we have similar taste in things. Like,
right.
You're drawn to comedy and you're drawn to rock and roll and entertainment and,
see,
and wrestling.
Now's the time to give it a try.
Yeah. And so the improv opportunity presented itself because James got presented a show to Just for Laughs.
Hold on a second. You can't call him
James. Oh, I'm sorry. James McGee.
Right.
It felt weird when it came out. James McGee got a...
Just for Laughs.
Just for Laughs.
And big comedy festival.
Right,
in
Montreal. It's a show called The Blender. It was his idea. And the concept was improv talent working with artists from other disciplines.
Yeah.
So I went as a pro wrestler and him as an improv comic, and we performed. And dude, let me tell you, I was more honestly more nervous for that than WrestleMania.
So
because out of my comfort zone, man, and I didn't know how I would do.
The first time I ever did improv,
thankfully, I killed.
The first time I ever did it was with the Groundlings in L.A. And the guy told me, his name is Michael Hitchcock, he's in all the Christopher Guest movies. He goes, listen, it's a 99-seat theater. It's the Phil Hartman Theater on Melrose. He said, if you kill it, you just killed it in front of 99 people. If you bomb, you bombed in front of 99 people. It doesn't matter either way.
Right.
Just go out there and have fun. And once you get that, like, because it's scary. You're live without a net.
In a field that you know nothing about.
And what improv situation were you in? Like, what was the...
So what did we do? So James McGee went up there and he started just riffing with the crowd a little bit, you know, and eventually... And that helped a lot, by the way, because it worked out a little bit of that initial, you know, we were just talking. Mm-hmm. So it worked out a little bit of the initial
nervousness. Yeah.
And then somebody said something about, like, Costco... And I said, oh, the only thing I know about Costco is I used to go there and eat hot dogs because they would have a $2, like, almost foot-long hot dog. You get, for $2, you get a hot dog and a drink. And I went on this somewhat long-winded story about just this hot dog. And he's like, okay, so Costco, I guess, and we won't talk about hot dogs. So the scene starts and we're at Costco and the first thing he comes up, he goes, hey man, you know where I could get a hot dog? And the place like exploded with laughter. And I was like, oh, we're in.
Yeah.
You know, you get that you get that first pop, whatever. You know, even as wrestlers, sometimes on a small town house show, I don't know, maybe you're Chris Jericho and you've been around forever. So maybe you're just like, oh yeah, my music's going to hit and they're all going to go ape shit. Cause you know, you've just got this rock star confidence or whatever it is. Maybe, I don't know. I'm just making this up, but for me, every now and again, because I've always kind of been a guy like on the fringe of like mid-card, almost upper mid-card sometimes programs, but kind of on the fringe. I don't know how they'll react in Peoria. I don't know how they'll react in Moline or whatever, like whatever town. I'm like, you know, Boston, I could kind of, okay, Northeast, I'm pretty confident, but I never know on house shows, my music hits, what's going to happen.
Yeah.
music hits, you get a huge reaction. You're like, oh, I got this. You know what I mean? Like, as soon as you get that first one, yeah, you're good.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Of course.
So it's the same thing with improv. Once we got that first laugh, it was just
smooth sailing. Improv is it's a team sport, and it's a lot like wrestling or like being a jazz musician or something. If you keep your stick on the ice, you'll score a goal.
Yeah,
if you're
yeah.
working with the pro.
I mean, and
that's what it
he's
is.
He's excellent, and so I really just had to kind of follow.
Yeah.
But then also, you know, wrestling is improv.
You do, you
know,
improv.
Yeah, I do. I've been doing improv for 17
improv.
Years.
That's why it's like, I don't do this. Yes,
right.
You do.
Yes,
that's
exactly. Right, exactly. So, you know, timing and just sense. You have a sense for these things. So it went really well.
I found, because I did improv when I left WWE in 05, I did it for 2 years.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
And I thought I know you did the acting classes. I didn't know you did improv.
I did improv with the Groundlings.
Good
it's
for
called
you.
Cooking with Gas, which is guests and alumni and something else. And you would go every Thursday. But I felt as long as you commit to your performance,
of course,
you'll always succeed, and you'll get a real sense of fearlessness, which is what improv brings to the table. Even like for us talking right now, what are we going to talk about? I don't know.
It'll be okay, though.
It'll be okay.
Yeah.
Because we play off each other and listen, you know, yes and. All those different rules.
Worst comes to worst, we just talk to James McGee and give him
James
the mic.
Man of,
oh, God, we got nothing else to say. Just pass to him.
But I found that it helped me as a performer in the WWE, having that improv experience.
For sure. Well, it all goes into your body of work, as
yes.
Dusty Rhodes would say. You know, yeah. Like, it's true. It's all just... tools in the toolbox, right?
Right.
And I really enjoyed it. But then I was also announced as WWE Superstar Sami Zayn when I did it that first time. So the next time I came to Montreal months later, I messaged James McGee, and he said, hey man, you want to do improv again, but this time just don't announce me? And so, because, you know, a lot of the pops that I was getting in there, because I got a big pop when they announced me coming to stage. So I go, oh. And I tweeted about it a couple of times. So there was maybe 120 people there. And I would say at least half were there knowing who I was.
Yeah.
So, but then I didn't want, like, I've always, even when I first broke into the indies, I didn't want my friends at too many of the shows, because I want an honest gauge of what I'm doing. You know what I mean? Because if right. your friends are in the corner, oh yeah, I'm over. Yeah, it was your five friends in the corner, right? Arthur Kalamidas sure. and Mike Murtukuta and
Arthur Kalamidas,
David Bergen,
who had a Kick-Ax
Kick-Ax record. Yeah, so, you know, but then it's like cheating to me. That's cheating. Yeah. I want honesty. I want
you
an want honest
to go
gauge.
Up there, it's like, you know, it's Rami's spy.
Yeah, yeah.
You
know, honest.
Don't say a word about Sami Zayn or WWE and just see how you do.
Right. And so that's kind of what we did the next time. And killed again. I really tickled myself with that one. Oh, God. I fell over laughing. I actually fell over.
You're actually holding your side. Like, you're laughing so hard, you're hurting your stomach.
I know. It went really well again. It turns out I'm excellent at improv, it turns out.
But see, that's and you are, and that's why you should do more of this.
I really want to do it more.
Which will hone those skills.
But to answer your initial question, yeah, I've watched the product once or twice.
Okay.
Yeah,
so you
30
said you
minutes
watched,
later.
You watched Survivor Series.
Yeah,
what did you think?
I did, you know what? The bug is coming back to perform and whatever, and wrestle again a little bit. I should say I haven't missed it at all, blah, blah, blah. But I do miss, I love performing. I'm a performer. I'm a, who knows again, if you want to keep peeling back the layers, what damage in my life, what lack of attention I got in my life when I was right. 3 years old that caused me to be the way I am. But I'm a performer by nature. I always have been. And I love performing. And I miss, above all else, I miss performing in the ring. I really, really do love that. But I really love other kinds of performance. And man, I would love to be able to sing in a band, but man, I'm bad. I'm just so bad. But maybe I should take singing lessons or something. I don't know. Or I'd love to act. I'd love to do all
See,
that. I'd love to write a book. I'd love to do that. I want to do the Chris Jericho route, man.
See, now you have all this time to think about the stuff that you want to do, and you're off the treadmill. It's like, why not go for it? You know what I mean?
Yeah. At the same time, I feel like people do what they want to do. So if I really want to do it,
yeah,
I would
do it.
You know?
Exactly.
So in time, I'm sure I'll do some of these things. But all this to say, going back to kissing your ass a little, that's what I admire about you is like, oh, man. Even before we met, I told you this. I knew we would get along. before we met because I was like, he likes all the same things as me. I read your first book and it was all Seinfeld references and talking about the Beatles. I'm like, oh man, we'd be friends for sure.
And the thing that broke the ice was Archie Comics.
Archie Comics. And of course you would know Archie Comics. By the way, P.S., little throwback to our first podcast where we talked about Archie Comics. I watched that show Riverdale.
Oh, my daughters love that show.
I am sorry to say.
You don't like it?
It's beyond dislike. It's like I'm insulted by what they've done to the Archie legacy.
You don't like the fact that Archie's now like in a street gang fighting Satanists. Yeah,
what's going on?
And going to jail, getting framed by Hiram Lodge.
Yeah, you know more about it than I do. I caught a little bit of it, and I was appalled.
Dude, so
Archie Comics. I know they're going to tweet me now.
My daughters were just here this week, and they're both wearing the modern day Jughead crowns, which are toques.
Yeah, that's right.
With a little serrated crown-like edge.
Hey, and you know what I hate? I'm sorry to cut you off.
Please.
Everyone's so goddamn good-looking on that show. I'm so sick of attractive people being shoved down my gullet everywhere we go. Why has everyone got to be attractive? Here's another thing I realized recently, spare time with Sami Zayn. The best shows are not filled with overly attractive people.
Hmm.
Breaking Bad. No one's exceptionally attractive.
Right? Stranger Things.
The Wire, which I watched in my time off, and it's probably the best show I think I've ever seen in my life. You know, The Sopranos. All these shows, like, they have characters that might be a little attractive, but they're not... What's the word I'm looking for? Like, they're not obscenely attractive, and like, they're not selling you sexuality. They're selling you a story.
Did you ever watch Stranger Things?
No, I'm
they
sorry.
They cast that show specifically with weird looking people, or at least they make them weird looking.
Yeah.
Because it's Stranger Things. It's not good looking things.
Yeah.
So I agree with you on that. And the Riverdale is a strange one for me because, you know, growing up
so
in the
freaking
Archie
hot.
Culture,
freaking pisses me off,
but,
man.
But last season, Jughead got the shit kicked out of him by a street gang. So they thought he was dead. My daughter, she's 11, Sierra, was bawling
because
she was convinced Jughead was dead. I'm like, Jughead's not going to die. He's the most popular kid. He's dead. He's dead. And of course, they had to wait until, you know, the next season or whatever. He's not dead. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that
but guess
is...
what? Would she have liked him as much if he wasn't so handsome?
I know. If he had the pointy
I
nose.
Demand uglier people on television. I demand it. I'm sick of this, man. It's bad. It's bad for everybody. It's bad. It's breaking people. You know, people didn't get all self-conscious. Why don't I look like that? And then body issues and whatever the hell else, man. Yeah. Like, give me some reality.
Right,
man.
Right.
Like, you know, in the comics... Veronica, Hiram Lodge, and her mother's name? Hermione, I think it is.
I don't even know.
The Lodge parents, he's an old tycoon.
Yeah.
The parents now in Riverdale are like, they're hotter than the daughter. They're like hotter than the teenagers.
It's like, I can't remember the guy who plays him, but I think it's like a guy that was like, used to be on like Superman or like Dean Cain.
He's a goddamn stud. It's bogus. I don't like it. I don't like it. Chris, I don't
like
it.
It's a huge hit, though. It's a huge hit.
Of course,
speaking,
man.
Speaking of which, though, the Archie Comics show that we did was with you, me, and formerly known as Neville.
Neville.
Have you spoken to him?
Yeah, he seems like he's really happy.
Because he's just going, like, he's working, like, the high school gym companies.
I love him. I got a lot of respect and a lot of love for Neville.
That's a true artist,
man.
Right there.
You know what? And he told me straight up, a lot of money. The indies ain't what they were when I left just 5 years ago. Like, old timer, been the indies in my day.
$50.
I'm Don Cherry all of a sudden. Hey, you kids,
indies.
Keep your sticks on the ice. I do a terrible Don Cherry.
That's a terrible.
Okay,
Don
so
Cherry.
James McGee over here does good impressions, right? But for years I've gotten his goat by claiming that I do a better Don Cherry impression than him.
Okay, let's have.
Huh? Bob Cole, I'm
right,
sorry.
Let's
it's Bob
have a
Cole
off right now. You do.
Oh no, I can't. I need to get in character. Okay. I need to draw.
What if Bob Cole's the commentator? James McGee, can you do a Bob Cole?
I can do Bob.
Let's hear it. Give him the mic there, right there.
Well, tonight they're doing something here at the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadians win the Stanley Cup.
Now, so for everyone listening who does not know who Bob Cole is, he's a Canadian hockey announcer.
He did Hockey Night in Canada forever, right? And then I would do it. I do a much poorer version of him. I go, oh, my goodness, would you believe that save? Oh, mercy. And it's just, it's obviously not as good, but I would
both
claim.
Both of you guys sound like you're just being like, hey, there's Bob Cole here. He's going to play the Maple Leafs. So, Luke Richardson was here tonight. Oh, mama.
Yeah, that's not bad. I guess it's not that hard, huh?
It's terrible.
Oh, and they're all bad.
So Neville, though.
Neville,
taking the chance to work in small. You said there's a lot of money to be made.
Oh, because I was saying, yeah, in my day. Right. Yeah, so we didn't, there wasn't as much money on the indies. And I did really well by indie standards for the time right before I signed. But he was telling me straight, he goes, man, there's a lot of money being offered in a lot of directions. But he's never been an overly money driven guy and overly, like, you know, that's why he maybe didn't fit in the WWE system that much, because the culture here is very, like, overly ambitious and money and success, and like that has to be what takes you to the next level. He's never really been like that. And so he went back, and he went because he's a loyal guy and he always just loved wrestling for Dragon Gate.
They
just
tried
went straight
to get
back
him,
to Dragon
they
Gate.
They tried to get him to go to All In, like over the top, and he wouldn't do it. He wanted to make his debut with Dragon Gate.
That's the kind of guy he is, yeah. Dude. A lot of love, a lot of respect for him. He's principled. I don't know if we discussed this on the podcast with him, and I hope I'm not airing his things, but it's so funny how, you know, there's millions of people who dream of being in our position, and his dream is being a postman. That's the kind of dude he is. Like, he's a world famous pro wrestler. His dream is just being a mailman. He just wants to walk around, deliver the mail, like real. He wants a simple life. He's a simple guy. Yeah, yeah. And
he
loves
to work where he wants to work and do what he wants to do.
Yeah, and he loves wrestling. He really does. And it's not to say he won't wrestle other places or take money. Money's, you know, you need money to live and all that. But he's not the type who'll, you know, sell his soul, so to speak, for an extra few bucks.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters. Both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Find it strange that you and Kevin, having these parallel careers, are also injured.
That's so funny.
Fairly seriously. I mean, you guys are both out 4 or 5 months, whatever it is, at the same time.
The timeline may even be similar for our returns. I don't know. Like, he also lives like 2 blocks from me. And when we were in Montreal, he lived like 2 blocks from me. It's can't get away from each other if we tried. Yeah. I get moved to Raw. He gets moved to, like...
And they put you guys together. I think right before you left, you guys were together.
Even when, I mean, he got signed. He got put into a program with me right away.
Yeah.
And like since, our names have been linked here in one way or another since. Like, we just can't get away from each other even if we tried, which I'm sure he'd like to get away a little bit. You know, there's times I'd like to get away a little bit, but it's all, you know, it's good.
But you have done work in Syria, setting up medical facilities and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, a mobile clinic thing.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was really rewarding, actually. That's a great example, going back to my father's advice earlier.
It's a tool.
It's a tool, and how do you use it? And I realized, you know, and hey, that's another perfect example of, and Becky was with me one time overseas when I was ranting and raving like a lunatic, as I do, and just talking about, again, confronting my own hypocrisy, talking for years and years and years about how it's so tragic, how what's going on in Syria, and I've never, but what am I doing about it? Nothing. You're all talk just like everybody else. Talk, talk, talk. What do you do? So I confronted myself and I did something. So it's like, that's kind of, again, and man, was it ever rewarding getting, you know, pictures and videos and whatever from the field, or getting numbers back. So I think all in all, the clinic ran for a year, almost a full calendar year, and it provided 8,000 medical services. And I thought, man, that's amazing. And
you basically paid for its existence.
Yeah, and you donated, and I thank you for that. And a lot of people donated, and you know, it wasn't all me. All I did is sort of middleman it and set something up. They did the work. The donors helped with the money, and the end result is people got helped. But that really was a big lesson. I was like, oh man, like we have power. We have more power than we think. We think we're powerless, because nothing's going to make you feel more powerless than like tyranny overseas. Like, you you know, starving children in Africa, you're like, man, that's overwhelming. I don't even know, how can I fix that? I'm just one guy over here. Yeah. But like, man, you organize.
You use your platform.
You use your tools.
Your social media.
Right. And like, you can actually, okay, I didn't end the war in Syria, but together we all got our heads together and people got organized and we facilitated some change that might have actually even saved a few lives to get people some medicine that they needed, diabetics or whatever, you know what I mean? So that's pretty amazing.
Over the top, yeah.
It's a big life lesson in a way. And that's, you know, it all went hand in hand with these changes and again, the not eating meat and the just like, yo, what do you claim to believe? Well, how are you living? All right, bullshit, hypocrite, fix yourself, you know? So there's a lot of self-confrontation and it's not always fun mm-hmm. admitting to yourself. It's extremely, there's a term for it, I believe. What is it? Cognitive dissonance, where it's like the phenomenon of when you can't, I'm going to explain this very poorly, but you can't reconcile your, it's like, I sound so stupid right now. It's almost like the justification we use, you know what I mean, to say why, oh, even though I know what I'm doing is wrong, there's a way of cognitive dissonance where you cognitively disown,
right,
break
right.
down the word, right? Like, this is why it's okay in this particular instance, because it's so uncomfortable to confront the reality of the truth.
Right.
Of your true hypocrisy or your true shortcomings or whatever. We have to come up with, these are survival tools, coming up with rationalizations and justifications of why it's okay. That's not just something like people do. It's almost an unconscious tool, right? Mm-hmm. And we do that because we couldn't live with ourselves if we knew
right.
that we were monsters.
Yeah.
So we have to devise ways of describing why we're not monsters.
Mm-hmm.
So you can feel good day to day.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's really, really, really uncomfortable, but you got to do it. I think you don't got to do anything, but I had to. I got to the point in my life where I was like, yo, come on.
So as we wind down here,
man, I thought we just got started.
Dude, it's been an hour.
Oh man.
We talk a lot.
I ramble.
No, it's no rambling. But my question is, so now what do you do like when it's time to start, you know, thinking about going back? Do you have to call the writers and say, or do you have ideas or have you even thought about that sort of
thing? So I told myself early on, I go, I'm not even going to think about this stuff till November. Well, it's November.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm starting to think a little bit. Right. But it's also out of my hands because if I'm still a few months away from coming back and I got this idea and I want to come back this way. But then when it actually comes time for you to come back, like, oh, Where does the math, you know, it's math. Like,
once again,
where does he factor in? Okay, plug him in here. And then all the things you've been thinking about for 3 months, getting married to these ideas are all in the toilet anyway.
Disappointed, right?
Yeah, so I'm not overly concerned about that. But I'll tell you one great thing that this did for me, this time off, I guess, ultimately, was it made me really okay with when I don't do this anymore. Because as I said earlier, we get such validation and we're rewarded so generously in so many ways for being who we are as wrestlers that we often, you see it a lot with the old timers too, or, you know, without naming names, you see it in some cases where like people don't even know who they are. They've just latched onto this identity they're special because God damn it, I'm so and so, you know who I am? I was this guy who play fought for 15 years. I was a huge deal in that world. But like, that was that world.
Yeah.
Who are you just day to day?
Yeah.
Right? So I got really okay. Like, if I never do this again, ever, I'm totally okay with it.
That's good.
Yeah. I'm okay with who I am with wrestling and without wrestling. And of course, that's like, you can record that today on whatever day today is, November 26th. 2018. That's how I feel today, and I don't know how I'll feel in 3 years. I didn't think I'd stop eating meat 3 years ago. I didn't think I'd do. You know, we're ever changing, a constant state of flux. But like, you know, as it stands right this moment, if I never wrestled again, I'm okay with that as a person.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm so all the more reason I'm so grateful that I can come back and I can still do this for however longer I can still do this for. I'm really grateful for all of it. I've been overwhelmed with gratitude in this time off, because the more I looked within myself, the more I realized how lucky I am.
Right.
And it really, really made me grateful. And also, just, it's so funny, man. You lose perspective. You know, I'd get to the airport, and I'm not a great person, not a great human being at the airport. It's where I would definitely say I'm at my worst. Just all my worst habits, all my worst things start coming out. And, you know, sometimes fans would just come at me the wrong way, and I'd be such a jerk or whatever. And now I see it totally different. I'm like, man, that interaction, I could ruin their day. I could ruin their day. And then not only that, but I could ruin the way they see me, yeah, or the way they see the people they look up to for the rest of their life. Or I could just be really nice for literally 5 to 10 seconds.
Right. Yeah.
And I could make their day, shape the way they view role models, shape the way they view people, humanity. Maybe, you know, I know I'm being a little grand, but maybe, you know, like, I mean, so why not just be cool, man?
Yeah.
If you have the chance,
give people their moment.
Cool. Just give them, yeah. You know, and I'm lucky to be in that position. And I realize that. And I'm just grateful for it. I'm going to try my best to do as good as I can for as long as I can. And that's the mind state of Sami Zayn.
What, when you watched Survivor Series, what stood out for you? Something that you liked?
Oh, man, I really love the Cruiserweights match.
Mm-hmm.
Because
Buddy Murphy
and Mustafa Ali. Yeah. And man, they work very quietly under the radar. They've been working their ass off to try to build 205 Live. And they're doing great week in, week out. Just working so hard. And it almost reminds me of when we were building NXT. The raw passion and that feeling like we can do that, we can create something, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There was a really, it's so intangible, it's so hard to describe, but it was the only match on the card, and I mean this with full respect to everybody on that card, but it was the only match where I felt hunger.
Mm.
There was hunger in their work. And that's a very hard thing to describe. I can't even describe it to, you'll understand,
yeah, I understand
it.
Yeah.
But I mean, 98% of fans won't be able to identify that. They'll just be able to go, oh, that was good. But I can feel their hunger. I can feel it. Mm. And that was special. I was watching it and I was like, respect to these guys. Mm. They're working with real, real heart. And that's not to say no one else was. A lot of great matches, a lot of people, you know, everyone works their ass off in WWE. But there was just a different feeling of like, these guys are,
they have something to prove.
They have something to prove, man. There's real hunger and real heart in this match. Ronda and Charlotte was awesome, and Brian and Brock was awesome, and I thought that was all that kind of like, I was watching intermittently, I didn't see the whole card. But those three matches all kind of stood out, and I was watching Shin and Seth. I was a little bummed out. I was like, man, these guys are so good, and they're working their asses off, and the response, it was like such hard work,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And it kind of got me thinking like, man, what, something needs to change. I don't know, you know, we're all,
it's hard though.
Yeah,
right?
It's hard work, man.
I knew they were going to get caught in the shuffle just by the whole, when Becky got hurt and then Charlotte's in, and of course AJ's out and Brian's in. Someone's got to take the fall, right, on that, you know?
Right, right. But Brian and Brock was really cool. Man, it was good. It was good. Everything's good. Everything's great. Everything's life good. Is so good.
Last question for you. What's been your favorite thing that you did during your time off?
The two improv sets with James McGee here would probably be up there. The conversations with my friend Jimmy Jacobs, our good friend Chris Scoville, of deep introspection, and
Jimmy's working with Impact now, correct?
Yeah. And you know, talking,
he's also hurt, isn't he?
I think he's had some knee issues, yeah, but I don't know the extent of it. But you know, it's funny because he's such a good friend, great guy, and he's pretty open about it, so I'm not airing any of his dirty laundry, but he went to rehab about a year or change ago, right around the time he got fired. And, you know, he really, so he's thinking in these really, we're on the same wavelength, mm-hmm, like thinking existentially and thinking in bigger terms and deep introspection and healing yourself and just healing the world around you and like being empathetic towards people and righting wrongs and all this stuff. Like, we're just speaking the same language right now. It's been really cool to connect with him. And it's just been nice to have time just at home and family. And I went on this awesome trip, posted some pictures on my Instagram, which, again, I'm very careful about how I use Instagram. As, again, James and I were just talking about here. James McGee and I were just talking about at Bustan about, you know, again, it's this tool. And, man, not to name names or not to disrespect, everyone's got their cross to bear. But, like, I go on some people's Instagrams and it's just, like, picture of you, picture of you, picture of you, picture of you, picture of you. I'm like, God, this is so
vain,
beyond vain. This is a sickness. But like, it's a cultural cultural sickness, and there needs to be studies on this stuff because it's so new. The way we live is so new, but that could be a whole other podcast, right? But it's so new, and so, like, man, I just don't want to use it that way. I'd rather, like, post the, even if it's not going to get likes, I don't want to be a slave to likes and validation from likes. And
that's,
like,
what we are now.
That's what we are, man. And, like, of course you're going to post a picture of yourself, because if I post a picture of whatever, my shoes and like this, like, okay, I might get 5,000 likes. If I post a picture of me holding the shoe or whatever, it's like 30,000 likes. So your brain's like, oh, I want that.
You gotta be in it.
Yeah, you know? So you start, it just becomes you. Because the fans don't want to just know, they don't want to just know what you're up to. They want to consume you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm
saying?
They
want a piece of you.
They want you, dude. They don't care about what you ate. They want to see you eating it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and then they want to eat you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's crazy, man. So, yeah, I'm just conscious about how I use my social media. But all this to say, I posted all these great pictures from my travels. I went to Paris for a signing, and then I ended up just staying extra, which is the Sami Zayn way, you know, like, here's an opportunity. You got to maximize it to the fullest. And went to Switzerland, which is a country that I've been to a couple times to work, but never really got to explore. Claudio's home country, beautiful, like beyond words, almost just like a breathing postcard. And then I was like, oh, well, this is it. There's nowhere better on planet Earth than this. And then I went to Norway, and I was like, oh my God, how? It just, how did this happen? It outdid, you know, probably outdid Switzerland. Started all Swiss and Claudio, but my God, Norway is so beautiful. And then I went to Iceland. Man, it was just magical. And it just, again, perspective is everything, man. Everything. I've been out of the WWE bubble, and then on that trip, I was out of the USA bubble. And I'm like, man, America's a little sick, huh? And, like, you know, it doesn't need to be this way. The world isn't this way. It's not this constant. The problems that are here, and sometimes you're so close to it and you live there,
right,
you just kind of take it for granted. But then you go to other places, I'm like, and you're like, oh, it's not like that.
That's
not the world, you know. And it's just nice, man. Traveling's so important.
It
traveling's
is
so
to see,
important
to see things, get that perspective,
to meet people, man. I was we should have just had the podcast with James McGee, because everything I'm talking about, it's stuff we were just talking about. And Montreal is such an amazing city, man. I wish I had more time to show you around today, but it's just so multi-ethnic, and
it's a real melting
so
pot,
diverse, and I just love it, man. I love seeing all these faces, and that's one of the great things that traveling does, is when you interact with people, you understand people a little more, you're willing to cut them a little more slack. But when you're a representation of people, ethnic groups, whatever it is only one thing on the news, and you don't actually ever interact with them, why wouldn't you believe that that's what they are? You just believe what you see or hear on television or whatever. When you actually meet them, you're like, oh, it's just, they're exactly the same. They want to be safe, and they want to be secure, like every other human being on this planet. That's it. Everyone wants the same stuff. Anyways, I could do another hour and a half, so we'll stop
last
it right
thing,
here.
Yeah. What's your favorite imitation that James McGee does?
Oh, man, he does a good Don Cherry. Does a good Sebastian Bach.
All right.
Does a great Sebastian Bach. I was actually going to say, I'm going to try to get Jericho to do his Sebastian Bach impression on the podcast. I was just saying
All right, so I'll do a Sebastian.
Oh, man.
Is it a Sebastian off now or what?
Sebastian off with Chris Jericho and James McGee.
All right, here we go. Dude, what's going on, man? Dude, I was going crazy, man. Give me some. Dude, I got the first Kiss record, 1975. Dude, you're not going to believe it. It's still the cellophane, dude.
All right, I'll keep mine brief because he did this at the concert.
Hey, do you guys in Montreal like to get loaded?
And it was, there's no, it was a total non sequitur, and then he broke in a song. I keep mine brief.
They gave me a Don Cherry.
Oh, let me tell you something. The good old Canadian boy here. We got a Sami Zayn over here, and he's over here, and he's doing the thing. Now, kids out there, I want you to watch what he's doing. What a good, this Sami Zayn over, yeah.
Oh, man. Great times. Yeah. James McGee, Sami Zayn, the mental state of Sami Zayn.
Thank you, Chris.
All right, thanks to the always introspective Sami Zayn. Always a great conversation with him. You never know where it's going to go, but it's going to be interesting. Very funny, great guy. Does a lot of work for charity. Go check him out on the Twitter at Sami Zayn. And it looks like his return to Monday Night Raw is imminent, judging from the video that we saw on Raw last Monday night. And we're looking forward to seeing Sami back. He's a great talent, and it's always exciting and hilarious when he's there. Speaking of exciting and hilarious, the wrestling commentary with interesting, weird, quirky people continues on Wednesday with the return of the amazing Jim Cornette discussing the state of the wrestling business today. So we got some great Christmas treats for you. Until then, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs. A big Merry Christmas, guys. Have a great Christmas. Be safe. Take an Uber. Do not drive drunk. Remember what we say at NHTSA. But listen, it's going to be a great Christmas, and we appreciate you being here. You know we love you. Jim Cornette's going to be here on the other side. In the meantime and in between time, we'll see you soon. A big yeah, boy, and a ho, 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 Merry Christmas.